Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. I'm Mark Labriola, and in this episode, obesity medicine specialist and OMA clinical education director, Dr. Nicholas Pennings, interviews Dr. Paul Cohen, a speaker from Overcoming Obesity 2019, about the different types of fat and the role they play in obesity. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Hi, this is Dr. Nick Pennings. I am chair of family medicine at the Campbell University School of Osteopathic Medicine and executive director of clinical education at the Obesity Medicine Association. And I'm here with Dr. Paul Cohen, MD, PhD. Dr. Cohen is a speaker at Overcoming Obesity 2019 in Boston. And Dr. Cohen is a physician scientist focused on the links between obesity and associated diseases such as diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and cancer. Dr. Cohen is the Albert Resnick, MD, assistant professor, senior attending physician, and head of the laboratory of molecular metabolism at the Rockefeller University. He's also an assistant attending in the division of cardiology at Memorial Sloan Kettering. Dr. Cohen's lab focuses on the biology of adipose tissue, forming basic translational studies investigating molecular underpinnings of obesity-related diseases. He also maintains a clinical practice focused on cardiovascular disease and prevention in cancer survivors. So I'd like to ask you some questions about the topic that you spoke on today, which is on brown fat.
Sure.
It's a very interesting topic.
And happy to be here.
Well, thank you for being here. I wanted to start off just with some general questions about adipose tissue itself. There is a perception in the general population and among healthcare providers that fat tissue is the same throughout the body, but it's not. What are the different types of adipose tissue in the human body, and how do they differ?
So when most people think of adipose tissue, they think of white adipose tissue or white fat, and white fat has evolved to store excess energy in the form of lipid droplets that can then be mobilized when nutrients are scarce. And in general, white fat is located in two areas, either below the skin, which is referred to as subcutaneous depots or locations, or around the internal organs, which is referred to as visceral white fat. And many studies have shown that visceral fat in particular is associated with diabetes, heart disease, and other serious health problems. Now, in addition to white fat, humans and mammals also contain another type of fat called brown fat. And this tissue, rather than storing energy, actually converts energy into heat and is thought to be important in maintaining body temperature. But studies in rodents and emerging data in humans suggest that activating brown fat could have anti-obesity and anti-diabetes properties.
Okay, that sounds very exciting for what we do. Where is brown fat in the body and how do you find it?
So in general, the greatest concentration of brown fat is in areas along the neck and cervical spine. But most brown fat is in deposits above the diaphragm, so in the chest cavity and along the neck. There may also be brown fat cells embedded within white fat that are too small in size for us to detect with our conventional approaches. The way we find or detect brown fat is with a scan called an FDG PET scan. So these are scans that measure the uptake of radio-labeled glucose, and tissues that take up a lot of glucose are metabolically active. And so brown fat, particularly around the upper neck, takes up a lot of glucose, and then when you overlay a CT scan, one can see that those areas correspond to areas that have the imaging characteristics of fat tissue.
Okay. And I also understand there's something called beige fat. Does that have the same benefits? How is that different?
Yeah. So there are two kinds of brown fat cells. There are preformed brown fat cells that are present during our embryonic development and are there when we're born. And those are also referred to as classical brown fat. But we also have an inducible kind of brown fat cell that's referred to as a beige fat cell. And in many ways, these cells are similar to brown fat. They can also convert energy into heat. But the main difference is that their activity is highly inducible. So in the normal state, they may look and function a lot like a white fat cell, but in response to cold or other stimuli, they can become highly active and convert this excess energy into heat.
Now, what makes brown fat brown is the density of mitochondria in the cells.
Yes.
So does beige fat, being a little bit lighter, have a lower density of mitochondria?
Perhaps a bit, but with the appropriate stimulation, the amount of mitochondria can really increase quite dramatically.
Okay. So how does brown fat vary among different genders, age groups, racial groups?
Yeah, so what I'll tell you, I'll focus on humans. We know a lot more in animal models, but in humans, what we know is that in general, the prevalence of brown fat, meaning is it there or not, a binary yes or no answer, brown fat is more prevalent in women than it is in men. And in addition, the mass and activity of brown fat tends to be higher in women than in men. A number of studies have also shown that brown fat goes down with age, so that older people tend to have less brown fat. In addition, brown fat seems to go down in obesity, so obese individuals have lower brown fat. And whether those are causal relationships or just associations, we don't know. In terms of racial groups, that's a question many people have asked, and it hasn't really been thoroughly studied. There are some papers suggesting that certain groups, for example, Southeast Asians, may have lower amounts of brown fat, but these are also very small studies, and so I think really we just don't know at this point.
Okay. So brown fat increases energy expenditure, may aid in weight loss, and potentially aid in certain diseases, particularly with respect to diabetes. Are there any downsides to having higher amounts of brown fat? Are there any health risks associated with it?
Well, there could be. So there is a suggestion in some patients with advanced cancer who have these wasting syndromes referred to as cachexia, where there can be paradoxical increases in brown fat activity. And you can imagine if someone's very ill with cancer and is already thin and their body's under a lot of stress, having a tissue that's consuming excess energy would not be advantageous. So that's one example, but I'd say aside from that, in patients who do not have cancer, who are normal weight or who are overweight or obese, because brown fat takes up glucose and free fatty acids to fuel this energy burning process, that leads to very impressive metabolic benefits.
Okay, so what are the prospects for increasing brown fat in the body?
Well, in humans, what we've seen in a number of studies, albeit small studies, is that cold exposure can very dramatically increase brown fat as measured by FDG PET scan. For most of these studies, subjects were studied either at basal temperatures or after a couple of hours of moderate cold exposure on the order of 15 to 17 degrees Celsius, which is roughly 60 degrees Fahrenheit. That was sufficient to lead to a dramatic increase in brown fat. And when people had serial cold exposure, studies have shown that to be associated with increased energy expenditure, decreased fat mass, improvement in insulin sensitivity, and other parameters. So I guess the one caution I want to make, again, is these are small studies generally of young, healthy subjects. But if this holds true in a broader population, including older and overweight and obese individuals, there could be great promise. Of course, many people are not that keen to expose themselves to cold. We like our thermal comfort. So an active area of research is looking for pharmacologic agents that can recapitulate the benefits of cold without having to actually be exposed to cold.
When we look at obesity rates across the country, we see higher rates of obesity in southern climates than we do in northern climates. Is there any association between ambient temperatures and obesity and brown fat?
Yeah, so great question. I don't think we really know at this point. Many people have also wondered, might there be associations between ambient temperature and diabetes? And I know of at least one very large meta-analysis that suggests there could be, where rates of diabetes would be lower in cooler climates. But I'm not aware of any studies, particularly within the United States, that have looked at different climates. And of course, in addition to temperature, there are a lot of complicating factors, including different populations living in these areas, different diets, different levels of physical activity. So I don't know that we'll arrive at any simple, clear-cut answer to that.
What is the impact of weight loss on brown fat? We often see when people lose weight that their metabolism seems to be slower. Is there an impact of weight loss on brown fat?
Yeah. So you're correct. You would think many people refer to something called the set point, where the body is very good at defending a body weight. And when a person diets, energy expenditure often goes down as a way to defend that set point. So one might predict then that with dieting, brown fat activity would go down. I'm not aware of any studies specifically looking at that. What we do know, though, is that in a small study of patients before and after bariatric surgery, these were obese patients, they saw an increase in brown fat after weight loss associated with bariatric surgery. At this point, we don't really know if that's something due to weight loss in general, or perhaps there's something really unique about the biology of bariatric surgery, which we're appreciating in other areas as well. And if we can better understand that, maybe we can learn new ways to activate brown fat in this population.
And we also see sort of a paradoxical relationship between white adipose tissue and brown fat. That is, white adipose tissue goes up, brown fat goes down.
Absolutely, absolutely. So there are studies that have shown, in fact, that people with brown fat tend to have lower amounts of white fat, and in particular, lower amounts of this unhealthy white fat, the visceral fat we spoke about a few minutes earlier.
Does physical activity have any impact on brown fat?
So if you're a mouse, it definitely does.
Okay.
I think for humans, it's something we need to still figure out. So some very nice studies have shown in mice that if you give mice a wheel to run on, which they really enjoy, they'll happily run 5 to 10 kilometers every night. And mice that run on a wheel tend to have an increase in brown fat. I am not aware of studies like that being done in humans, but at least in mice, it does look like physical activity and aerobic exercise can activate brown fat.
So the gut microbiome seems to be a hot topic, and there seems to be a lot of theories connecting the gut microbiome to most every human condition. Is there any connection between the gut microbiome and brown fat?
I think there very well may be. So again, in small animal studies in mice, people have absolutely shown the microbiome to play a role in the activation of brown fat. There's one study I know of in particular where they took animals exposed to the cold and then took the microbiome from those animals and gave it to animals that had not been exposed to cold. And the animals that received the microbiome from the cold-exposed animals showed an activation of brown fat. So that, I think, very clearly shows that the microbiome is playing a role. I think the challenge going forward, of course, the microbiome has thousands upon thousands of different microbes, and figuring out what the key microbes are, and then moreover, what are the key metabolites or polypeptides being made by those organisms that are activating brown fat will be the next step.
All right. Well, it looks like there's a lot of areas of rich research that can be done in brown fat. And I appreciate you giving us an update on where things are and hope to hear about progress in the future.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Pennings and Cohen. For more information about Obesity Medicine podcasts and other resources from the clinical leader in obesity medicine, please visit obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. Love this episode of Obesity, a Disease? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. The views expressed in this podcast episode are those of the show hosts and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please check back soon for another episode of Obesity, a Disease.